I had just finished a dietetic internship and was excited to start studying for the RD exam. I mean that wholeheartedly. I like studying and learning, but more than that, it was the last step, the last hurdle to jump over in order to become a registered dietitian. I know you feel me on this one. If you listen to my journey so far as a dietitian, you know that I wasn't certain where I was going to work. But finishing the internship was a great feeling, and studying was the next and final step. The way I've always studied best is to write things out. As I sat down to study, I noticed writing was suddenly challenging. My hand was shaking, which never happened, even when taking an organic chemistry exam. Remember those? At first, I thought I was feeling nervous and a little anxious about all the stuff I had to study. But as time went on, it didn't get better. It actually got worse. Naturally, I consulted with Dr. Google for some concrete scientific advice. And Dr. Google, like always, told me I was dying or at least had a horrible and debilitating condition. Everything listed didn't sound like much fun to me. I convinced myself out of the long list of possible conditions that I had Parkinson's disease. I decided I better go to the doctor because I couldn't study without being able to write, and at this point, writing had become almost impossible, or at the very least, not legible. My doctor ran a series of tests and referred me to an endocrinologist. So off I went to the endo, who was a very lovely man, but oh my goodness, he sure scared me. He said my thyroid levels were off. My TSH was so low it was undetected, and my free T3 and T4 levels were very high. Free T3 and T4 are thyroid hormones. There were potentially several reasons for why my levels were off. One of the reasons, he told me, was thyroid cancer. To be honest, I didn't hear the far less severe causes. They were lost to me. Once he said the C word, I heard nothing else. While waiting for my appointments for further testing, I continued to study and tried my best to shut down the narrative in my head. I wasn't always successful. I thought, how is this happening? I finally got to the end of school, about to take the RD exam and start my career, and now I potentially have cancer? I started working in public health, which was a good distraction. Between work and studying, I had enough on my plate to distract myself and stay as focused as possible, one foot in front of the other. Little did I know that that approach would help me down the road, but that's for another day. I scheduled my exam for the end of August. I had so many different emotions at that moment and really struggled to stay focused on the exam. My emotions hit me hard, probably because I was so nervous. That was the last thing I needed to be doing at that time, though. Plus, it didn't help that the girl sitting across from me, who was also taking the RD exam, was the noisiest test taker. I swear she clicked the mouse with a sledgehammer. Fortunately, I got to the point once the test started where I could quiet my mind enough to finish and pass the exam. I was so happy. I forgot about how I was feeling and called all the important people in my life who had supported me along my journey to tell them the amazing news. Then I got home and started worrying. But at that point, I had nothing to distract me while I waited for my doctor to call with my results. 2 weeks of painful waiting went by until I was called by my endocrinologist to say the results were ready. I called one of my closest friends, who's like family to me, and asked her if she could go with me. So we went to my appointment together, and I was finally told what was going on with me. I had Graves' disease. The name alone is so morbid. Graves' disease. My friend who went with me when I was diagnosed has multiple sclerosis and lets everyone know she has it. Her reasoning being that if there's ever a cure, she'll be the first to know. Everyone will call her to let her know that a cure's been found. When the doctor said I had Graves' disease, she high-fived me and said, "Welcome to the autoimmune club, Jana." I'm sure the doctor was really confused. If you know my friend, though, that's exactly something she'd say. The most optimistic, glass half full, don't worry until you have something to worry about kind of person. I left my public health job 4 months after I was diagnosed for a clinical job in a large teaching facility. The best thing about teaching hospitals is the teaching and the research. There were lectures from medical experts around the world. Anytime they had a lecture on hyperthyroidism, in particular Graves' disease, I would go. It was a little intimidating being in a room with a bunch of physicians. They all knew me as the dietitian with Graves' disease. But I decided to take my friend's approach. If you hear of a new amazing treatment or cure, I want to be the first person you call. I asked all kinds of questions and approached the lectures as free consultations. Plus, it's always good to know about the most up-to-date research or if there's anything I should do different. I've learned to advocate for myself and got second, third, and fourth opinions on how to manage my condition. Finally, after many years, I've found what's worked for me and found a physician who works well with me too. That makes all the difference. I'm Jana Nickel, and this is the RD Exam Made Easy podcast. Hey there, friend. In this episode, I'm going to review a case study. You'll learn how to break it down and how we as dietitians can be the biggest advocates for our patients. I share my story with you because you just might be asked about hyperthyroidism on the exam, and stories are the best way to tie everything together. In this case study, you're going to learn more about hyperthyroidism, plus a little bit more about kidney disease. I just gave you a hint. Stay with me. Before we start, I have a really exciting announcement. One of the most popular podcast episodes was the one that breaks down tube feeding and parenteral nutrition. When I was in college, I remember learning how to calculate TPN. And I gotta be honest, it went right over my head. I was so confused and eventually got to the point where I thought, I don't need to know this. I'm willing to miss those questions on the exam. Well, let me tell you, I needed to know it, and I have dietitians reach out asking me for TPN help. Also, everyone has different exposure and experiences with it in their internship. I've been teaching for over a decade now, and I gotta tell you, math is one of those topics that makes people freeze and shut down. Math teachers really gotta approach math differently and make it more fun. If you haven't listened to episode 4 yet, which covers TPN and tube feeding, be sure to do so. And if you're looking for a resource that shows you step by step how to calculate parenteral nutrition in an easy to follow and easy to do yourself way, I've got you covered. I created the perfect workbook for you. It shows you exactly what to do, every math step and calculation, and takes away the guesswork. It's very practical, and you'll have everything you need in one resource. You don't need to sit and worry about how to calculate TPN. I want you to have confidence with your calculations, confidence with your math, to the point where you'll not only be ready for any TPN calculations on the exam, you'll be hoping to get them because you've got the math down. If this sounds like something you need, check out the link in the show notes. So let's get to our case study. Billy Bob is admitted to the hospital after getting in a car accident. His injuries are minor, but he did end up with a laceration to the stomach and a broken leg. After going through the electronic medical record and reviewing the past medical history, you see that Billy Bob is a 66-year-old male with a history of stage 3 chronic kidney disease, Graves' disease or hyperthyroidism, and cataracts. you look at his labs and see that his free T3 and T4 are actually normal. His TSH is also normal, so his thyroid levels are under good control. His phosphorus and potassium levels are slightly elevated. His GFR is 35. And you notice that his weight is stable from the last hospital visit 6 months ago. His BMI is 24.9, which puts him in the normal BMI category. While cataracts is a concern to the patient, it's not something a dietitian can address at that point in time. So that is not something you would spend time on. So the other two conditions that the patient has is Graves' disease and stage 3 chronic kidney disease. Let's start with hyperthyroidism. Hyperthyroidism is when the thyroid is overactive. It's hyper. Think about a kid running around in circles. It kind of feels like that because the body feels like it's working on overdrive. People with hyperthyroidism, such as Graves' disease, often have a fast heart rate, GI discomfort such as diarrhea and frequent bowel movements. They can also have sensitivity to temperature, shaky hands, and dry eyes. They may lose weight due to increased energy expenditure and may require additional calories. I say may because you have to look at someone as an individual. If there's no weight loss, they likely are fine and don't have increased nutrient needs. You can also do a diet recall, which can help you determine how many calories they typically eat in a day. When someone has hyperthyroidism, at least when it's initially diagnosed or is not well controlled, the TSH is low. I know it seems backwards, but this is how it works. In hyperthyroidism or Graves' disease, the thyroid produces excess T3 and T4 hormones. The pituitary gland tries to get the body back to normal by stopping the production of TSH. TSH is thyroid stimulating hormone. TSH is a hormone that stimulates the thyroid. When the thyroid is hyper and won't calm down, it doesn't need to be stimulated, so the pituitary gland stops the production of TSH. When excess T3 and T4 is produced, that's when someone will start to feel symptomatic. Now, this is not the case with Billy Bob, but let's go over what hypothyroidism is. It's the opposite of hyperthyroidism. I remember hypo as slow. With hypothyroidism, the TSH is high and the free T3 and T4 are low. When someone is hypo, the symptoms are opposite from hyper. They feel tired, sluggish, sleepy. They might experience hair loss, and they may have weight gain due to decreased energy expenditure. Therefore, they may need less calories. Again, everyone is different, so you have to look at them clinically and as an individual. Now that you understand the difference between hyperthyroidism and hypothyroidism, let's get back to Billy Bob. His weight is stable and his thyroid labs are good, so I wouldn't worry about his history of thyroid disease at this time. Endocrinology will follow the patient. If Billy Bob was losing weight because his thyroid's out of control, then you would address increasing his calorie needs to make sure that he doesn't have any further weight loss. But at this point, that's not what's happening. So let's see where we're at so far. You've determined that his history of cataracts and hyperthyroidism are conditions you won't be addressing right now. But Billy Bob also has CKD, or chronic kidney disease, which should be addressed, especially because we know some of his labs are elevated. So first, what is chronic kidney disease?
Chronic kidney disease happens when the kidneys are damaged. The stage of CKD or chronic kidney disease depends on how well the kidneys are functioning. The GFR or glomerular filtration rate, how's that for a tongue tie, gives a value which is used to categorize what stage of kidney disease an individual has.
Billy Bob has CKD stage 3, So that's definitely something you'll want to pay close attention to. Billy Bob's potassium and phosphorus levels are also elevated, and his GFR is 35. If the GFR is between 30 and 59, that's an indication the patient has CKD stage 3. So what are we going to consider with this patient? Well, first thing you're going to do is have a conversation with him and see what his level of understanding is with regards to how he's managing his kidney disease through his nutrition. You want to see if he knows what to eat, how to manage his condition, and how to prevent the progression of kidney disease. So you speak with Billy Bob and he states he has a great appetite. He doesn't have any GI upset or tolerance issues with his meals. He eats regular meals and feels his appetite hasn't changed at all. He's only had a quick conversation with someone regarding his diet, but he was in shock at the news that there was something wrong with his kidneys, so a lot of it went right over his head. He asks you for help. He's been feeling very tired and was told by his doctor that he has anemia, but he doesn't understand why. So where do you start? Well, you've already reviewed his medical history, and you know that his meal intake prior to admission is great. So there's no issues with his PO intake or tolerance. He's asking you for help regarding how to manage his CKD, and he's tired and anemic but doesn't know why. At this point, you gather some helpful information for Billy Bob, and you spend some time educating him. You would want to spend some time going over foods that contain potassium and phosphorus, since his lab values were elevated. You also want to emphasize the importance of monitoring his intake of those foods. And you want to go over a renal diet so he understands protein sources and roughly how much protein he can have in a day. You also want to incorporate motivational interviewing principles in your conversation, because this really helps the patient drive the conversation and come up with the plan that will work best for them. Billy Bob is not a patient that's going to be giving a lot of resistance because he's the one asking you for help. So that's not an issue at this point, but it could happen during the conversation. So if you stay on top of it and use your motivational interviewing techniques, it can really help the conversation flow and help the patient feel motivated and in control of their plan. When you're done with the education and the conversation, you want to make sure you assess his level of understanding and his expected level of compliance. This gives you, the dietitian, and the rest of the interdisciplinary team an idea of where he's at with regards to implementing what he learned. It's also a good reminder for when you follow up with Billy Bob where he was at the end of the education that you provided at this visit. And if you're not the dietitian to follow up with him and somebody else is seeing him, it'll give them an idea of where Billy Bob was at this point in time. Now remember, he also asked why he's anemic. So why do you think that is? Well, people with CKD have decreased kidney function, and therefore they don't produce as much erythropoietin, which is produced in the kidney. That can be the cause of anemia. You would discuss this with the doctor and see if there's anything else that you should address from a nutritional standpoint. Remember, it's best to work as a team. A lot of your questions can be answered by talking to the other experts managing the patient. So let's review the medical nutrition therapy for chronic kidney disease. For patients with CKD stage 3, like our patient here, Mr. Billy Bob, he'll need a protein restriction of 0.6 grams per kilogram of body weight. Since his potassium and phosphorus levels are elevated, he'll need to monitor what he eats. It's important to note that foods that contain protein also contain phosphorus. If Mr. Billy Bob follows the recommendations and decreases his protein intake, it should also help his phosphorus levels. He should be eating a good amount of calories, at least 25 to 30 calories per kilo, but might need as much as 30 to 35. You already determined that cataracts and Graves' disease are not primary concerns at this time, which is why you focused on CKD. I know that's a lot to cover. Remember, with hyperthyroidism, the TSH is low and the free T3 and T4 are elevated. This is not the case if a patient is well controlled with medication. At that point, the TSH should be normal as well as the T3 and T4. With hypothyroidism, the TSH is high and the free T3 and T4 are low. With CKD stage 3, the GFR is between 30 and 59. Let's go over stage 4 and stage 5, even though the patient does not have that yet and hopefully never progresses. But if he did have CKD stage 4, the GFR is 15 to 29, and for stage 5 CKD, the GFR is less than 15. Let's hope Billy Bob never progresses to stage 5 CKD. Protein needs to be restricted in patients with CKD stage 3 and below. Sodium, potassium, and phosphorus need to be monitored, and intake needs to be decreased if the labs are elevated. As dietitians, we have a critical role in helping people live their best lives. Be an advocate for your patients and yourself, because remember, you're a patient too. You go to the doctor and you get regular checkups. And whenever you're dealing with a patient, remember you start with reading the medical record, look at the past medical history, look at the anthropometrics, the labs, the medications, and take the time to really talk to your patient. They're an individual and you will get a lot of information by having a conversation. Once you have all the information and you've had a conversation with the patient, then you can start to use your magic and make some great recommendations that will help your patient. Stay on top of your study game. There's no limits or boundaries to achieving the success you so deeply desire. Until next time, my friend.
If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe and leave a review. Share this episode on Instagram at JanaNicoleRD and help spread the word to other RDs-to-be. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time on the RD Exam Made Easy podcast.